In 2004, two respected economists declared that computers would never be able to drive cars. The task was simply too complex, they argued. Too much pattern recognition, too many split-second decisions, too much unpredictability. Within a decade, Google's self-driving cars had logged hundreds of thousands of miles on actual roads. What happened? We crossed an invisible threshold in technological capability, entering what's now called the second machine age. Just as steam engines once liberated us from the constraints of muscle power, digital technologies are now freeing us from the limitations of mental power. The Industrial Revolution took a century to fully unfold. This time, we're witnessing transformation in real time, and most of us are struggling to comprehend the speed and scale of what's coming. For millennia, human progress barely moved. A farmer in ancient Rome lived much like one in medieval France. Same tools, same yields, same struggles. Then, around 1765, James Watt perfected the steam engine, and the graph of human development bent sharply upward. Within a century, factories produced goods at unprecedented scales. Trains outpaced horses, and cities grew skyward. We weren't limited by muscle anymore. Today, we're experiencing a similar inflection point. Computers now recognize faces, understand speech, diagnose diseases, and navigate highways. They're writing articles, composing music, and beating world champions at games once thought to require uniquely human intuition. Moore's Law, the observation that computing power doubles roughly every 18 months, has held steady for over 50 years. We've entered the second half of the chessboard, where exponential growth produces results that feel like magic. The second machine age operates through three interconnected forces. First, it's exponential. Each advance builds multiplicatively on what came before. The ancient chess inventor's story illustrates this, requesting one grain of rice for the first square, two for the second, four for the third. The first half of the board yields comprehensible numbers. The second half produces astronomical quantities. We crossed into computing's second half around 2006, explaining why technological change now feels breathtakingly fast. Second, this age is fundamentally digital. Digital information can be copied infinitely at virtually zero cost. Creating the first copy of software might cost millions, but the millionth copy costs almost nothing. Google Translate leverages vast libraries of human-translated documents, expensive to create originally, but now available for algorithmic analysis at negligible cost. Third, the age is combinatorial. Each new technology becomes a building block for countless future innovations. Facebook built on web infrastructure to digitize social networks. Instagram recombined mobile technology with photo sharing. As possibilities multiply, innovation shifts from finding things to improve to identifying truly valuable combinations. When IBM's Deep Blue defeated Garry Kasparov in 1997, many assumed machines would dominate intellectual work. Yet freestyle chess tournaments revealed something unexpected. Amateur players with ordinary computers who mastered collaboration beat grandmasters with supercomputers. The lesson? Humans partnering effectively with technology achieve superior results. This pattern spans industries. Legal discovery software reviews millions of documents faster than lawyers, yet top firms use these tools to free lawyers for judgment and strategy. IBM's Watson processes medical literature that would take doctors 160 hours weekly to read, yet best outcomes come from doctor-machine partnerships. Zara has store managers observe shoppers and use pattern recognition for inventory, tasks still difficult for machines. The key insight? Machines handle routine pattern recognition, while humans contribute judgment, creativity, and contextual understanding. Workers who thrive aren't competing against machines, but racing with them. As futurist Kevin Kelly observed, you'll be paid in the future based on how well you work with robots. The question isn't whether machines will take your job, it's whether you'll make machines amplify your capabilities. We're living through a strange contradiction. Medical breakthroughs, instant information access, and endless entertainment have never been more abundant, often free. Yet median household income has fallen since 1999, while GDP soars, and the top 1% captures over 22% of total income. Digital technologies create and distribute value differently. Instagram reached 130 million users with just 15 employees before selling for $1 billion. Kodak, once employing 145,300 people, filed for bankruptcy. Digital products need few creators, but serve millions at near-zero marginal cost. Traditional metrics miss this transformation. GDP counts only market transactions, ignoring free digital services. Wikipedia would have cost billions to create traditionally, but contributes nothing to GDP. Google searches save users roughly 15 minutes per query, worth about $500 annually per adult worker, yet remains statistically invisible. We're simultaneously richer and poorer than statistics suggest. Richer through miraculous conveniences, poorer as middle-class jobs disappear and rewards concentrate among fewer winners. Technology doesn't automatically lift all boats. It creates new possibilities while disrupting old certainties. J.K. Rowling became the world's first billionaire author, not because she's 1,000 times better than other writers, but because digital technologies allowed her to reach billions of customers across multiple formats. In traditional markets, a bricklayer who completes 900 bricks versus another's 1,000 earns roughly 90% as much. But in digital markets, the slightly better mapping app captures the entire market, leaving nothing for the 10th best option. This winner-take-all dynamic proliferates for three reasons. Digital goods have near-zero marginal costs. Telecommunications allow talent to be leveraged globally, and network effects make products more valuable as more people use them. Facebook grows more useful as friends join. Apple's app ecosystem attracts developers because it has users, which attracts more users, a self-reinforcing cycle. Small advantages translate into thousandfold differences in earnings. The income distribution shifts from a bell curve to a power law, where a tiny few reap disproportionate rewards. Google purchased Waze for over $1 billion while ignoring countless similar apps. Timing, luck, and network effects matter as much as absolute quality. This creates both opportunity and anxiety. Talented individuals can achieve unprecedented reach, but even highly skilled workers compete in markets where second place means near total exclusion. Our Victorian-era education system, designed for bureaucratic conformity, no longer serves us. Today's workers need distinctly human skills, asking good questions, creative thinking, teamwork, and generating new ideas. We've never had more resources for developing these capabilities. Online platforms offer self-paced learning across any subject. Higher education continues paying dividends. College graduates see consistent employment growth, with unemployment rates a third of high school graduates. Google economist Hal Varian's advice: become an indispensable complement to something cheap and plentiful. Develop skills that work alongside inexpensive data and computing power. Data interpretation, creative problem solving, emotional intelligence, and navigating ambiguity. Education alone won't solve what's ahead. We need entrepreneurship support, better labor market matching, and increased research investment. Ideas like negative income tax deserve consideration as machines handle routine work. The peer economy offers promise, platforms efficiently connecting people with tasks and resources. History provides grounds for optimism. Humanity has consistently increased wealth and freedom while decreasing violence and poverty. As machines handle routine tasks, we can focus on creativity, exploration, love, and community building. We're not passive observers. We're active participants shaping how these tools serve human flourishing.